गोपी जान वल्लभा
गिरीवरधारी
यशोदनंदना व्रजनरंजना नचारी यमुना तीव्रा नचारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज विहारी गोपी जान वल्लभा गिरीवरधारी यशोदनंदना व्रजनरंजना यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज विहारी कुंज विहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परविजाकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतशिशिमाद इस डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ISKCON BBD संस्थापक आचार्य His Divine Grace AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories all glories all glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga All glories to Srila Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जाय मुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, Text 15. Rishi Karunikas Tasyaha Pradad Ubayam Ishvaraha Dharmasya तत्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयम् ईश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयम् ईश्वरः धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयम् ईश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयमीश्वरः धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् अरुणिकस्तस्य प्रादादुभयमीश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयमीश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मापि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् माताजी ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रदादुभयमीश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् ऋषिकारुणिकस्तस्य प्रादादुभयमीश्वरा धर्मस्य तत्त्वं ज्ञानं च मामपि उद्दिश्य निर्मलम् Rishi, the great sage Narada Muni, Karunikaha, naturally very affectionate or merciful to the fallen souls, Tasyaha, to her, Pradat, gave instructions, Ubhayam, both, Ishwaraha, a powerful controller who can do whatever he likes. Narada Muni, Dharmasya, of religion, Tattvam, the truth, Jnanam, knowledge, Cha, and Mam, me, Api, especially, Uddishya, indicating, Nirmalam, without material contamination. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, Narada Muni delivered his instructions both to me who was within the womb and to my mother who was engaged in rendering him service. Because he is naturally extremely kind to the fallen souls, being in a transcendental position, he gave instructions on religion and transcendental knowledge. These instructions were free from all material contamination. Purport. Here it is said Dharmasya tattvam jnanam cha nirmalam. The word nirmalam refers to spotless dharma, spotless religion, or in other words, Bhagavata dharma. Ordinary ritualistic activities constitute contaminated religion, by which one benefits by developing material wealth and prosperity. But uncontaminated, pure religion consists of understanding one's relationship with God and acting accordingly, thus fulfilling the highest mission of life and returning home back to Godhead. Prahlad Maharaj advised that one elevates oneself to the standard of Bhagavata Dharma from the very beginning of life. Kaumara acharet pragnyo dharman bhagavatan iha. The Lord himself also speaks of pure, uncontaminated religion when he says, sarva dharman paritejya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Bhagavad Gita 1866. One must understand one's relationship with God and then act accordingly. This is Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavata Dharma means Bhakti Yoga. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Bhagavatam 1.2.7. To be situated on the platform of pure religion, one should perform Bhakti Yoga in relationship with Krishna, Vasudeva. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport to Canto 7, Chapter 7, Text 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of what Prahlad learned in the womb. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupagadama Yam Dadati Svapadantik Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamlam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swaminiti Namine Nama Acharya Padaya Nitai Kripa Pradayine Gauragata Damadaya Nagaragrama Tarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Gopi Paranadana Dase Iti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhi Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripatamaham Bande Shri Guru Dhritarinam Yatkripatamaham Bande Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishwaram. Katanchana smrite yasmin dushkaram sukaram bhavet vismrite viparitam syat shri chaitanyam namamitam. So we just celebrated Radhashtami. There is a very nice anecdote which Giriraj Maharaj relates. Once Prabhupada, he was invited to the house of the Birlas. Today, you have a lot more other businesses and business houses in India. But during those days, Birlas were the richest people in India. And before Prabhupada could speak, Giriraj Maharaj gave Mrs. Sarla Birla, who was the wife of Mr. Birla. I mean, there are many Birlas, but in that family, Mrs. Sarla Birla was the wife. And he gave a list of topics to her, a tentative list of topics to choose from which she could, from which Prabhupada could give a talk. And she chose the topic, how to be successful. So here was the richest family. And she is thinking, Mrs. Birla is thinking, the lecture should be on how to be successful. You would normally imagine that they are the most successful people. And this is the nature of material life, that no matter what you get, you want more, more and more. So, Prabhupada gave a very interesting lecture on this, how to be successful. He began by saying that the material world is a prison where Lord Durga, she sits on a lion and she has so many instruments in her hands. So he said that it is not a great achievement if you can transfer yourself from an ordinary prison cell into a sophisticated prison cell. And then Prabhupada explained that success means you put yourself in the care of Srimati Radharani. Instead of putting yourself in the care of Durga, you change whom you are putting yourself under. You change it to Srimati Radharani. And Prabhupada explains that in the Nectar of Devotion, in the chapter 22, he explains that Srimati Radharani is the compassionate feature of Krishna. So this is the secret of success. But in the world, as we know of course, today even religiosity is on the decline. But whatever religiosity exists, the only conception, let me stress that again, the only conception that people have is that religion is meant for some material gain. Something. How to live a happy life in this world. But as Prabhupada explains, there's no such thing as happy life in prison. So the teachings of the Bhagavatam is meant to bring us to the platform of being freed from this prison house. Bhagavatam is supposed to bring us victory from being imprisoned. That's why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the first verse of the Shikshashtakam says, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. What kind of victory is this? It is the victory from the blazing fire of material existence. It is the victory from being imprisoned since time immemorial. Now, the Bhagavatam doesn't speak of anything else except how to be free from this material contamination. In fact, of course, for somebody who's atheistic, it's better to be religious than to be atheistic. Because at least it is a progression. At some point in time, you will surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavanmam prapadete. But from the perspective of the Bhagavatas, for them, even this religiosity, as the Bhagavatam rejects, is cheating religion. Because you are approaching God with a personal motive. So what Prabhupada has presented to the world is something revolutionary. Because nowhere, maybe very few people, like for example, Prabhupada once visited the church of Francis of Assisi. And then he appreciated that, oh, this is first class God consciousness. So like that, very rarely do people have the idea that religion is meant to love God. Of course, people do have the idea religion is meant to love God. But love God so that He provides what you have, what you want. But this concept of developing one's relationship with the Supreme Lord and rendering service unto Him, that you can hardly find anywhere. Because Prabhupada said, how can you develop a relationship with God when you don't know who He is? Right? When people don't know who, he said, Prabhupada, how can you love somebody when you don't know who he is? So, that opportunity to know who is God is provided in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this is Rajavidya. This is the king of all knowledge. Because it puts you in touch with your eternal identity and how to act in that identity. And the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada quotes here, Sarva Dharman Paritya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. So abandon all of the other things that you know of and surrender unto me. So which means that we have to act in our identity with the Supreme Lord. That is something which has to be carefully understood. Because bhakti is not, as Prabhupada explains, is not just some mere sentiment. Prabhupada explains the very concept of love. Love means action. You perform some action. Of course, in the initial stages, we tell people, you just have to add Krishna to your life. Whatever you're doing, just add Krishna to your life. And what happens when you add Krishna to your life? I was a student when I took to Krishna consciousness. So the temple president of the temple where I joined, he was in his middle age by that time. But he explained his story that when he was a student, he encountered the Krishna book in the university library. And he said he was very attracted by the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He had studied in an elite institution in India. And he said, I liked the manner in which Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness. Very scientific. But he said, but I was a chain smoker. I was addicted to smoking. But I understood from Prabhupada's teachings that I have to somehow or the other add Krishna to my life. So I went to ISKCON Juhu, Radha, Shishi Radha Ras Vihari. I purchased a set of beads and I started chanting. And he explained to me, you know how I would chant? With my left hand, I would smoke a cigarette. With my right hand, I would chant on my beads. But after a while, the cigarette went down and the beads went up. So that is the effect of practicing pure devotional service, which means devotional service as explained by Prabhupada in his books. Because this verse, Prabhupada explains very clearly that when you perform devotional service, automatically, your attachment for material activities will decrease. And Prabhupada often calls this the real test. You can look up in the Veda base, type that word, real test or test. You will find again and again and again, Prabhupada saying, the test of Krishna consciousness is when you practice according to what he has taught in the Bhagavad, according to the teachings of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, your attraction for Krishna, your attraction for rendering service to Krishna will increase and your attraction for material life will decrease. So that is the test. When these two things happen simultaneously, that means you are practicing this process of Krishna consciousness, which is free from all material contamination. So this is the test, right? So I was traveling last month and I noticed that whenever I traveled quite a bit last month, whether it was in a flight or whether it was in a train or in a bus, wherever I traveled, I noticed that people were busy. What is it that they were busy with? They had their smartphones or tablets and they were busy with watching movies on it, or they were playing some games. Constantly busy. So, when we say that when we practice bhakti, right, that it produces detachment, it means that we should be free from these kind of anarthas. So, it is not that because we are practicing the highest process, we have a certain privilege. which other people don't have. Anyway, we are practicing, we are chanting Hare Krishna. We've added Krishna to our lives. So it doesn't matter whether we also watch movies or whether we also play games. No, Prabhupada explains that Krishna never touches somebody who is in Tamoguna and Rajoguna. Prabhupada explains this, very clearly explains. So, we have to see this. This is the test, as Prabhupada explains. As we practice Krishna consciousness, is our taste for rendering devotional service increasing in such a manner that we find all these stupid things that people do in this world, movies, games, abominable. As Narada Muni instructs Vyasadev, what does he instruct? That when a person is engaged properly in Krishna consciousness, what does he have attraction for? He has attraction only for transcendental literatures. Any other literature, he considers it to be meant fit for the crows. That means garbage. So this is the standard, this is the test. That when we engage in Krishna consciousness, we develop such a taste for Krishna consciousness that everything that is not related to Krishna, we find that it is abominable. This is the test, as Prabhupada explains. And he gives the example of, I mean, this is from Bhagavatam itself, that when a hungry man eats food, I've said this several times, when a hungry man, quoted this several times rather, when a hungry man eats food, two things happen. He feels nourished and his hunger goes away. Only nourishment is not a sign that you are eating properly. Your hunger should also go away. So like that, when we practice Krishna consciousness, two things should happen. Artha Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, Artha Pravrti, which means our attraction for Krishna, should exponentially increase, and Anartha Nivrti, or attraction for Maya, should decrease. And that is the test. And the expression Krishna consciousness was taken by Srila Prabhupada from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's expression, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. That's the expression, the exact expression in Sanskrit. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. Mati means consciousness. Krishna Bhakti Rasa. The rasa of Krishna Bhakti. Your consciousness is seized by Krishna, is filled with Krishna Bhakti Rasa. That is the definition of Krishna consciousness. And you can see in the prayers of the six Goswamis, He Radhe Vrajadevi Kechalat Lalite. So, Kallola Magnamuhu, they are constantly absorbed in the thought of how to serve Krishna, how to serve Krishna and his associates. This is the platform of real Krishna consciousness. So, how do we attain to that state of Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada explains, of course, this Lord Chaitanya himself explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that we have to adhere to our practice of Krishna consciousness. We have to chant the holy names and practice the instructions given to us by our founder Acharya. We have to preach Namaruchi, Jivadaya. We have to preach. And there's one more element, Vaishnava Seva. In fact, in our Krishna conscious tradition, Vaishnava Seva is especially very much emphasized. Prabhupada especially brought out the importance of it. Because if you look at the Mangalarti prayers in our temple, that is unique. It is Prabhupada who did this. It is not that the Gaudiya Mutt had the Samsara prayers. It is not instituted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It is Prabhupada who instituted this prayer. So the first prayer in the morning is the Samsara prayers. So Prabhupada wanted to maintain that focus, that the success of the Krishna consciousness movement. He said this, that the reason that I am successful is because I followed my spiritual master 100%, he said. So he wanted that to be the standard. He wanted, that is the legacy that he has passed on. that as the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, our success will be determined by how absolutely we follow him. That's why we start with the samsara prayers. So to keep that focus straight, yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, the whole purpose of the Krishna Consciousness movement is to please one's superiors, the founder acharya and the previous acharyas. And it is by this process, yasya prasadad, this is by this process we attain success. We don't do that, then we don't attain success. And how is it that we can please them? Prabhupada said, if you really want to know me, study my books. He said that. And if you really want to achieve success, we should follow the same example that Prabhupada set. For example, here, one particular point here in the translation, it says that the instructions of Narada Muni are free from all material contamination. And Prabhupada explains, just like you have the book Bhagavatam, you also have the person Bhagavatam. Right? The person Bhagavatam personifies the teachings of the book Bhagavatam. And we should know for sure, just like here is mentioned, the instructions were free from all contamination. So we should have this faith also that the teachings of Srila Prabhupada are as good as the teachings of the Bhagavatam. There is no difference. It is not that we have to only consider what is called, within quotes, the essential teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Last Sunday, I was asked to give a class at an ISKCON temple because the previous week, the speaker had said that we should focus on the essential teachings of Prabhupada, because there may be some teachings of Srila Prabhupada which may not be materially perfect, but Prabhupada is transcendentally perfect because he is giving us the teachings of, because if we follow his teachings, we'll attain the goal of life. But not that all portions of his teaching, especially when it deals with material subject matters, may be perfect. But we can just ignore it. We just have to focus on the core teachings of Prabhupada. Now, this whole concept that there is something called essential spiritual message, there's something called material subject matter, it doesn't work like this. Try this. All of us know that Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu lies in the Garbha ocean. You have a lotus stem coming out of his navel and a lotus flower. And where are the material planetary systems situated? They're situated on the lotus stem. Is the stem material or spiritual? Vishnu is spiritual. The stem is coming from his navel. It is connected to his navel. Is it spiritual? Is it material? So this is the kind of complication that you'll get into. The moment you try to say there's something called spiritual teaching, there's something called material teaching. This is not how we look at the teachings of the Acharya. Of course, why did he say that? Why did he say that? Okay, let me just, there are many reasons why he said it, I guess, the previous speaker. I heard his lecture. So the particular point that he brought up was, for example, if you look at this verse, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayat Ahetukam. If you look at the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says that bhakti is not just an emotional matter, it is active life. And then he says that even the Shudras, the Vaishyas, and the less intelligent woman can understand it. Now, this is a topic which has been fairly controversial, Prabhupada's statement that women are less intelligent. So the speaker said, actually, the Bhagavatam doesn't mention anywhere that the women are less intelligent. You can check it, he said, and any other scripture for that matter. Even Manu Samhita, he claimed, that doesn't mention this. So when Prabhupada mentions these things, the less intelligent woman, just ignore it. This is not the essential teaching of the Bhagavatam. There is a problem with this. Because just as Krishna, you cannot touch Krishna directly. We cannot. We have access to Krishna only through his devotees. So you cannot touch the Bhagavatam and say, Bhagavatam doesn't mention it. So therefore, because we have no access to the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. So you cannot touch the Bhagavatam and say, Bhagavatam doesn't mention this, but Prabhupada mentions this, therefore this is not essential teaching. Now first of all, the whole purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to teach us that by pleasing the Mahat, the great devotees, Krishna can be pleased. And without pleasing the great devotees, there's a question of Krishna being pleased. So we don't look at Prabhupada through the Bhagavatam. We look at Bhagavatam through Prabhupada. So if Prabhupada had said this, it must be true. So we should try to understand how it is true, not whether it is true. Whether it is true means, Prabhupada once wrote a letter to Hridayananda Maharaj. He said, there's a difference between philosophical speculation and mental speculation. And Prabhupada just was completely against, all the acharyas have been completely against mental speculation. What is an example of mental speculation? Prabhupada explains in that letter. He says, when Krishna says, I am the taste of water, we don't think whether Krishna is the taste of water. We try to understand how Krishna is the taste of water. The moment you think whether Krishna is the taste of water, it means you have entered into the arena of mental speculation. But you are allowed to ask how Krishna is the taste of water. Then you can try to understand. So let me just, in a few minutes, of course, you can give, this is a topic you can give seminars on. It's a very vast topic. But let me just try to summarize this particular thing. Because it's, if you read the purport to this last text which Prabhupada has quoted, you'll find this there. Less intelligent woman. What does it mean? So, in all the previous ages, the only way you can ever get out of this material world, the only way to attain spiritual perfection was to develop detachment. So, in the Vedic sense, in the Vedic context of discussion, intelligence refers to only one thing: the ability to distinguish between matter and spirit and to act on that platform of being constantly detached. This is generally a thing that women find difficult to do because by their very nature, they are attracted to relationships. Their whole life is centered around relationships, meaningful relationships. So they find that extremely difficult to distinguish between this process of jnana and vairagya is something which is extremely difficult for them in general. So therefore, it was considered in the previous ages that women are less intelligent because without being able to distinguish between matter and spirit and acting on that platform of constant detachment, the question of relationships and things like this, constant detachment, that was something which is very difficult for them. Therefore, because that is the only definition of intelligence. Intelligence means to distinguish. Intelligence does not mean you can perform this activity, that for you consider like that performance of different activity, different skills. Women are far superior to men in different areas. Men are superior in other areas. Like that. So that's a mix. But the context of intelligence in the Bhagavatam and the scripture refers only to this. However, Prabhupada explains that in this age, if you read the section of prayers by Queen Kunti, he says, as far as the process of Bhakti Yoga is concerned, women have an advantage over men. Because he says that women can easily surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas men cannot easily do that because of their big false egos. They find it very difficult to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada, whenever he uses that expression, less intelligent woman, he's referring only to this particular aspect. But however, when it comes to devotees, women who have taken to devotional service, he repeatedly emphasized that it is bhakti itself, as it mentions here, it is bhakti itself which produces knowledge and detachment. So nobody has to separately perform a process of jnana and vairagya as it was expected in the past ages. Jnana, vairagya, it's like a progression. But here, in this age, everybody has an equal opportunity for, I mean, when you practice devotional service, automatically Bhagavad Jnana and detachment comes. So everybody has an equal opportunity. And not only does everybody have an equal opportunity, the women have an advantage. So the problem is, the moment you start thinking, our Acharya has said something. This is not very popular, right? Because in the modern material world, with its political correctness, very difficult. What has Prabhupada done? No. Oh, then you start coming up with all these interpretations. This is not the essential teaching. And it doesn't mention anywhere in the Bhagavatam. You come up with all these explanations, which is all complete speculation. For example, the Bhagavatam is like the sun. Prabhupada's purports are also like the sun. So when Lord Chaitanya met Sarvam Bhattacharya, and Sarvam Bhattacharya is explaining the Vedanta Sutra, at the end of it, what happened? Sarvam Bhattacharya asked Lord Chaitanya, why is it that you are silent? You have been quiet for so many days. What happened? So he said, I can understand the Vedanta Sutra. It's as brilliant as the sun. But you're clouding it with, you're covering it with the cloud of your imagination. So, just as the Bhagavatam is brilliant as the sun, Prabhupada's purports are also as brilliant as the sun. So, whenever we encounter difficulties, we don't have to invent these clouds of speculation. In the process of inventing these clouds of speculation, we would only be obscuring the message of Prabhupada. So, what we need to do is, first of all, Prabhupada explained this. I don't know Krishna, Prabhupada said. I know my spiritual master and he knows Krishna. So this is the approach that the members of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness are meant to take. We don't know Krishna. We don't know Bhagavatam. We don't know scripture. We know nothing. We know his teachings. So this is our business, that whatever he has said is true. There's no such thing as Prabhupada being transcendentally perfect, materially imperfect. There's no such thing. He is, as this mentions here, Narada Muni is mentioned, his instructions are free. Narada Muni's instructions are free from all material contamination. So similarly, Prabhupada's teachings are free from all imperfections. So we need to have that faith. We need to know that Prabhupada's teachings are as brilliant as the sun. So this is the secret. When we say that we follow the process of spotless Bhakti Yoga, it also means to accept the Acharya as also spotless. It is not that we practice all the way. No, Acharya, some faults he has. It's not like that. To be properly situated in the platform of pure devotional service, you have to also accept the Acharya. Acharya Mam Vijaniyam. He is non-different. He's not Krishna, but he's non-different. Just one last point, when I said this non-difference with Krishna. Sometimes devotees think only God is omniscient, right? Only God is omniscient. Means God is all-knowing. So they use this argument. Prabhupada said, I am not Krishna. I am not omniscient. So Prabhupada is not all-knowing. Fact, Prabhupada did not claim that he is all-knowing. Prabhupada said, whatever Krishna wants to reveal, he reveals. That is called omniscience. Just because Prabhupada is not all-knowing does not mean that he could have made a few mistakes. Because Prabhupada explains, because omniscience is one concept. Infallibility is another concept. They are two different concepts. It is not that if a person is not omniscient, he will be infallible. Sorry, he will be fallible. Fallibility means the tendency to commit a mistake. Just because Prabhupada doesn't know everything does not mean that he committed some mistakes. Because Prabhupada explains, even a fool, forget about somebody like Prabhupada, even if Prabhupada explains, forget about somebody like Prabhupada, even a fool, Prabhupada explains, can be infallible. How? By repeating the teachings, he says. Even a fool, as long as you repeat the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, even a fool can be considered infallible. So, omniscience and infallibility, they're two different concepts. Because I've heard this argument also, that Prabhupada doesn't know everything, so It's natural that Prabhupada committed a few mistakes. No. Omniscience and infallibility are two different, because Prabhupada said, whatever I have spoken, I have learned from Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. So therefore, just because he's not omniscient, no jiva is omniscient, doesn't mean that they're fallible. They can be infallible because they follow the teachings of the acharyas and Krishna. So I think I'll stop here. These are the two things. One is about the process of two things that I could think of for this purport was how by the practice of Krishna consciousness, your attraction for Krishna should increase, and your detachment and your from material activity should also increase. And the other was about this aspect of the words of the pure devotees being free from all material contamination. So if there are any comments or questions, we have 10 minutes. Yes, ma'am.
I would like to add something to what you said.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Prabhupada or the scriptures don't isolate women as such, because in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, we see that in Bhagavatam it is said, Stri Dvijabandhu Shudranam. Vyasdev Muni compiled Mahabharata and other itihasas for this category of people. And also in Bhagavad Gita it says, Striyo Vaishyas Tatha Shudras. So, the Shastras also talk about the intelligence as gradations. So, people who are really intelligent in terms of discriminating between spirit and matter, they are called as such Brahmanas. And people who can administer things. So, what I want to say is that the Shastras actually don't isolate women as a category. So they say that they don't have intelligence along with the other groups as well.
Shudras, Vaishyas, yes.
It's not just women. So there are gradations of people for whom it is difficult to discriminate between matter and spirit.
Yes.
Yeah. So Prabhupada had to, for practical reasons, point out or say something like that. So it is not that scriptures also separate women.
Yeah. Now, for example, see, the point is when, for example, Bhagavatam itself, Kunti's, out of her humility, she says, Katam Pashyema hi Striyaha, how can we women understand you? How is Prabhupada going to explain this? Just because it's politically incorrect. Why is Kunti saying this? She is one of the greatest devotees. Even so many acharyas sing her prayer. I mean, it's a favor. She's in the Bhagavatam. But she is herself saying, Katam Pashyema hi Striyaha, how can we women understand you? Why is she saying that? I mean, you have to explain, you have to defend the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is spotless. So, where is it? It's there very much in the Bhagavatam. This claim, the fact is, yes, how can we women understand you? That is there. Because this is the argument. But it doesn't say, how can we less intelligent women understand you? But, I mean, what does this mean when Kunti is praying? This is Prabhupada's explanation. That this is what she means. How can we less intelligent women understand you? That is what she is trying to say. So, it's there in the Bhagavatam. Yes, of course, I agree with you that it's just... I mean, Brahmanas were considered the highest in terms of the discrimination between matter and spirit. Yes, it's a gradation. And that, of course, the Shudras and others are also classified in that. But this is a topic which is so sensitive today that, people consider that, okay, Prabhupada got these ideas from the Victorian era because he studied in Scottish Church's College. It came from an external source. It is not from Bhagavatam. So many things. Because the moment you start saying this, then everything else comes, you get into trouble because you start doubting everything else that he said. For example, you'll see later on that Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers tells that about keeping away from rubbish cinema songs. Prahlad Maharaj, in his age, rubbish cinema songs. So somebody said this is an anachronistic literary didactic device. It is not some literary truth. But the point is, Prabhupada, in any society you have forms of entertainment, okay? The word cinema may not exactly refer to the cinema that we know of, but it refers to a form of enjoyment. That's it, a form of entertainment. So there's nothing, it's not an anachronistic literary didactic device. Rather, it is very much true. It's there in the Bhagavatam. Yes, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your very interesting lecture. I was just thinking about the Kshatriya women and the Brahmana women. How would their intelligence be explained? Because we understand that Krishna is putting the women, the Shudra and the Vaishyas, as in the category of less intelligence because of their attachment. So I just wonder, what about the Kshatriya women and the Brahmana women? Because in my own experience, I can also, I know some Brahminically minded women, very, you know, very, very bright and intelligent. So how would you explain that?
Two things. One thing, Mataji, we should avoid the comparison between devotee women and the women like Kshatriyas, because the very nature of devotional service, whether you're a man or woman, and you practice it, it produces, whether you're a man or woman, it produces this discrimination and detachment. So automatically it comes. But so that is one category of people, the devotee woman. As Prabhupada said, these are not ordinary women. They are as good as their brothers, he says that in Krishna consciousness. But when it comes to, okay, the traditional societies or on the past ages, as he was saying, there's a gradation. Generally, the Brahminical wives of the Brahmanas, they were definitely more advanced than the Shudra woman. There was a certain gradation. But when it comes to the, when it says intelligence there, it simply means you don't find examples in the scriptures, or very rare. You don't find women who can just go out into a forest and meditate and do Jnana Yoga and realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't happen. That is why it used to be said you have to be born again as a man in your next life. Without being born as a man, there's no question of attaining the perfection of life. So they said the highest perfection for a woman is next life she'll be born as a man. And she can progress from there. That is the traditional path. Because the fact that a woman, by her nature, she cannot sit alone in a forest and meditate without no other people, no association. That's impossible for them in the past, at least. Even today, I mean, that concept is impossible. Therefore, it was said that you have to become a man in your next life, then you have to practice Dhyana Yoga and all these. Finally, you will realize the Supreme Person of Godhead. That's one category of people. But for devotee woman, definitely, you can see that, I've seen that my own wife is more detached than me in certain aspects. So the very fact that they practice bhakti produces that sense of detachment. So that for devotee women, I mean, they can progress as quickly, in fact, even more rapidly than men, because they have an advantage.
Thank you. But still, I would say that it's, as devotee women, is the aspect of attachment is always there, and that's why they always should be under protection of a man.
Definitely.
Even if they are, you know, devotee women. So I think it's, we should be careful about thinking that, I mean, only if they are really, really on the highest platform of, you know, Krishna Prema, then, or self-realized, then, you know, then yeah, we are talking about another thing. But materially speaking and socially speaking, then I still think those rules have to be followed if they are, you know, in that body.
Yes, Master, I agree with you fully. It's a question of qualification. The qualification to be, even Kunti, for that matter, if you look at the Bhagavatam, she's praying to Krishna. What kind of prayers? If you look at her prayers, she's saying, please give me more distress. And I was hearing a lecture by Prabhupada yesterday's morning where he says how Kunti is saying that when there is distress, Prabhupada explains it so nicely. When there is distress, you are there with us. And when Prabhupada speaks, there is that sense of Kunti actually speaking, you know, to Krishna. When there is distress, and Prabhupada explains so much distress they underwent, but Kunti is still saying, when there is distress, you are with us. What is the use of a life which is so, I mean, apparently which is very comfortable without you? So Kunti is expressing that feeling to Krishna. Yet, if you look at the teachings of Queen Kunti, Prabhupada explains that Krishna was also a member of the Vrishni dynasty. So Kunti is saying to Krishna in the Bhagavatam that let me be free from all these attachments, because although her children are pure devotees, it is still a material consideration that Krishna should be with my children, right? So therefore she prays, let me be free from this contamination. What is their platform? So I agree with you what you're saying, that we have to be realistic. We cannot just say that because devotee women are different, therefore we could do whatever we want. We have to be realistic. Even if Kunti could pray like that, so obviously we have to be careful. That unless one has the adhikar, one cannot act on that platform of being completely, as Prabhupada normally recommended, a woman should be under protection of a husband, son, father. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. You can say without the mic, but I'll have to repeat it, but you can say it, yes. Could you say a little bit more on what means infallible? Teaching which cannot fail. Okay, then the moment I say that, immediately people would say, Prabhupada, he said, women have 36 ounces in their brain and men have 64. So many times he quoted. Now we know it is false. Right? So is he fallible or is he infallible? Now, it's like this. I have a microphone here in front of me. Okay? Now, tomorrow maybe they will discover that this microphone can cause cancer or it can explode. Who knows what they'll discover. So then, I may stop using it. People may stop using it. Okay? But what am I using this for? I'm using this to amplify my voice. I have a voice of my own. But this is just something meant to amplify my voice. Right? Tomorrow, if this is found to be imperfect, I can reject it. That doesn't mean my voice is imperfect. My voice is fine. This is the one thing which has got imperfection. Right? So like that, Prabhupada, to amplify the Vedic teachings, he uses certain devices. So one device that he used was modern research. Whenever modern research supports a Vedic conclusion, he would use it as a device. Later on, it may be found to be false. So what? Just like Prabhupada has asked, is this a Vedic teaching? This 36 ounces, 64 ounces? He says, no. This is from modern psychology. But why did he use it? To amplify his voice. And what is his voice? This point about women are less intelligent. To convey that to a wide audience, he just used modern research. Right? Because modern research is accepted by everybody. Just because the research changed, it failed, doesn't mean that he's imperfect. He's just amplifying his voice with the device. Just like this microphone, if it gets, people discover this is crazy after some time, and people will not use it. Doesn't mean that Achintya Chaitanya Das, who spoke on this day from the Vyasas and in Mayapur, was imperfect because he used a microphone. I'm just using it to amplify my voice. So like that, Prabhupada used different devices to amplify his voice. That doesn't mean that he is imperfect. So like that. So infallible means, literally infallible means, none of his teachings are false. Whether material, spiritual, whatever. Yes, Maharshi. It's already 9 o'clock, so those who would like to go can go, and others who would like to stay back can stay back.
Thank you so much for class. One thing, when we were talking about self-education, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, teaching, preaching, I remember this one time Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he was saying that when somebody hears, prove to me, like somebody says something bad about devotees, they say, oh yes, I knew that he was never a devotee, this, that. And when somebody says something good about devotees, people say, prove to me that he is good. So, and then one time Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, during the class, he was asked, how do you find a perfect personality? And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he just closed the paper and he said, okay, I'm sitting on the Vyasasan and I'm saying that I'm a perfect personality. And the devotee said, Haribo. And he said, you're all fools. You can't just believe me what I say. I may be a cheater. He said, you have to hear, and you have to like seriously discriminate if it's a cheater or if it's a true acharya. And a few days ago, I was also listening one lecture from Chaupati, and one devotee, he was saying that we don't have to prove, we have to improve. So okay. It got a little bit like confusion in my head. We don't have to prove anything, we have to improve. At the same time, if we don't prove that Srila Prabhupada's teachings are perfect, it means that like people will not believe us. So I just wanted to clarify.
Yes, it's very important. I think that as with the progress of time, I'm beginning to realize why it's so important. Prabhupada, why did he stress this thing? Books are the basis. Everything is in my books. Because, I mean, I joined 26 years ago. I couldn't imagine ISKCON would be like this today. Because during those days, everything that we do, everything that we talk, it's all based on Prabhupada's teachings, Prabhupada's books. But today, you almost have a Kumbh Mela kind of situation where, you have to find out what does Prabhupada say. I mean, you have to say, is this from Prabhupada? What? I mean, just like that. So that's unfortunate. And I think that it's time that we have to reverse this back to the original state of Krishna consciousness, that where everything should be based on his books, because his books are the reference for everything else. So today you can find devotees in the Krishna conscious movement. They may be there for several years, but they've not finished Prabhupada's books. They don't even know some of his teachings. So I think that aspect, what you said, is very important. That, I mean, that you, nowadays it's become a little bit of a sentiment you accept because they're senior devotees or this or that or friends or whatever. But it should be all based on, because in ISKCON we accept everybody, gurus, disciples, grand disciples, everybody we accept based on what? Based on Prabhupada's teachings. If you don't know the teachings, I mean, you could be misled. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.